this week's Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, the founder of the UK's integrative cancer care charity Yes to Life, and in the show I explore the world of integrative medicine for cancer, an inclusive approach that takes in both orthodox and complementary and alternative medicine methods. Around Christmas time, Liz Butler was a guest on the show. Liz is a highly experienced nutritionist with extensive experience of supporting people with cancer. In the show, we explored many of the practical questions and controversies surrounding the world of nutrition and cancer. But before the interview, Liz had sent me a very interesting piece entitled Cancer is a Loss of Connection. The content of the piece, while scientific, is a deal more esoteric and really appealed to my interest in health and cancer. There was simply too much in there to do justice to it within a single show, so I resolved to devote a second show to Liz's thoughts on this topic. I met up with her again at her home in southwest London. So, good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
I've really been looking forward to today. Last time we spoke, you'd sent me something you'd written called Cancer is a Loss of Connection, which was very stimulating reading. And much as I wanted to talk about it last time, there simply wasn't enough room. It was a show on its own.
Yes.
So here I am today. And well, in this piece, it seems to me that you're grappling with a very big view of what cancer is expressing, with a view to gaining understandings that will help people to make important fundamental changes that could reverse the processes of cancer. So you start by setting out the commonly held view that cancer is like an alien invader that's infiltrated us, hell-bent on destroying us from the inside, only to suggest that maybe this is quite a superficial view and that the underlying reality is something entirely different. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. Before I start talking about that, I think it's good for me just to say that these ideas are my own ideas.
Sure.
And they're drawn from lots of different places. A lot of it is from the science world. A lot of it is from more spiritual readings. But I've drawn together lots of things and come up with my own ideas. So they are not necessarily everything, everyone will agree with them, but I'm just going to put forward
thoughts.
Yes.
Attitudes change by people exploring new ideas. Great.
That's true. In terms of why someone gets cancer, we can never answer that question completely because, you know, there's lots of unknowns in this world that, you know, we'll probably never explain. But I believe that there's an element of the body giving us a message about something being off track. So, you know, when we get diagnosed with a serious illness, we may initially think, gosh, this awful thing's happened to me. You know, why has this happened? We might look to physical reasons why the disease has occurred. But I do feel that maybe not always, but very often, and I've seen this in a lot of my clients, but also in my personal life too, that if we go deep within, we sometimes come to a point where we can see that perhaps there is a deeper purpose. And I think that often the deeper purpose is it's a wake-up call for us when we get diagnosed with something serious. And the body, I don't believe, works against us. I believe it's always trying to bring us to a point of healing and well-being. And I think when serious illness arises, it could be that the body is giving us a strong message to allow us to wake up to the fact that things are out of balance in our life and helping us to guide us back to putting those things back into balance.
Mm. Yeah, I listened to a very complex lecture once which actually proposed a mechanism whereby cancer was actually enabling you to survive longer in the face of a serious breakdown of your own systems.
Yes.
And quite the reverse of what it appears to be doing. So,
yes.
I mean, I actually completely with you on the fact that I don't think the body actually works against us. That's not in the nature of things. The body is always, it seems to me,
doing its best, whatever we throw at it,
yes,
to
survive.
Be well.
Yes, yeah. And I think sometimes it doesn't always appear that the body is doing its best for us, but I think sometimes if we start to explore, then we often find that actually it is.
Mm. Well, very many people obviously do report that cancer was, you know, in retrospect, usually they report that, yeah, cancer was the wake-up call I needed, and actually my life kind of began when I got cancer.
Yes.
And up till then I was a kind of a shadow of myself, maybe.
I hear that story often,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that people, as you say, in retrospect, when the disease is under control, whether they always think that it was something they would
not
like to go through again.
No.
But I have had so many clients who have changed their life in such significant ways for the better.
Mm.
And when they look back, they would never now want to go back to live in the way that they were before.
Right.
And their
life
has opened up in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well look, Dr. Kelly Turner, in her great book, Radical Remission, she identifies these 9 key strategies that all the people that she spoke to, who are the people who had a remarkable recovery from cancer, they identified as being key ways in which they achieved this.
Mm.
And I printed them out for myself just to see. And interestingly enough, out of these, it's pretty notable that 3 of them are in what might be called the realm of the human spirit, and 4 of them are in the psychological emotional field. So that's 7 out of 9 that really are nowhere even close to medical interventions.
Yes.
Pretty interesting.
Yes.
Right? And these are the things, I mean, I think there were more than 75 different things that people said they'd done.
Mm.
But these 9 were the ones that everybody did. Absolutely
everybody
said these were important.
Mm.
So this does seem to support your
theory
here.
I was so thrilled when I read Kelly's book. I mean, first of all, it's an absolutely brilliant book. I recommend it as the first book to read to all my clients, because it is based on science. But the way it's written is very easy to read, even though it's fully referenced. It's very easy to read, but I think it's just such an inspiring book and such a hopeful book. And when I read it, it just thrilled me, because
it
just really confirmed everything that I believed, which is, because even though I'm a nutritional therapist, after having worked in this field for coming up to 17 years, the thing that I've really come to believe is that nutrition and diet is very, very important, but there's other elements, particularly what we do with our emotional well-being, that have a hugely important part to play. And my feeling is that those aspects to do with the mind and even the spirit probably play a larger role than diet and the other things we do on a physical level, such as exercise and taking supplements. So when I read Kelly's book, it just really confirmed what I'd been thinking for a long time. And as I say, hers is based on lots of research, so I was really pleased to see that she's come up with the same.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll read them out, just the listeners might be interested. And so these are the 9 things. And so there's radically changing your diet. That's kind of fairly obvious within the circles we move in.
Yes.
Taking control of your health was the second one, which is, you know, obviously a kind of, you know, relationship to yourself and your place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And taking charge of your life, which is an important thing. Third one, the great one, but you know, maybe pretty unexpected, following your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's you know, that's definitely in the realms of the more spiritual.
Yes.
Fourth one, using herbs and supplements. That's fairly obvious. Releasing suppressed emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously we're back into the psychological emotional area. Increasing positive emotions. Embracing social support, that's a very important one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, very in line with what you're talking about, deepening your spiritual connection and having strong reasons for living.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're great there. I mean, as a guide for like where to put your attention, if you've got cancer, those are fantastic, aren't they?
They are,
yeah.
They are. And I've got something similar, which I can talk about now if you want me to,
sure.
Which sort of fits so well with that, and I call it the seven elements of healing. And I've created a pie chart, and it just so happens that there are seven colours of the rainbow, so it's quite nice in sort of making it look nice that they've all, each element of that pie chart has got a different colour of the rainbow. And a few years ago I came up with this, and it just seemed to cover all the aspects that I felt were important, and the areas that I feel people should be addressing when they've been diagnosed with cancer. So nutrition is on there, obviously. And the second element is detoxification. So I feel that what we put into our body is only one half of the coin. We also need to look at how we are excreting and eliminating things, our waste materials, not just chemicals that come from outside our body through environmental exposure, but also we create masses of chemical waste every day. And if our liver's not functioning well, if our kidneys and our colon are not functioning well, then these start to build up in the body. So we do need to look at our inbuilt, very highly sophisticated systems of detoxification and elimination and making sure that they're functioning well. So that's the second element in my seven elements of healing. The third one is activity and movement. Now, quite interestingly, that wasn't one of the nine
things
that came up with Kelly's research, but I do believe that activity is important, and there's some really good research now that shows that physical activity, and it doesn't have to be getting down the gym and doing intensive exercise, and actually I do feel sometimes that that can be detrimental. I think it's very important when people are thinking about the type of exercise after cancer or when they're living with cancer that they are very careful in what they choose, because if you push the body too hard, that puts a lot of strain on the adrenal glands and other systems in the body. So it's really about getting the balance right. But when you do get the balance right, then I think physical activity is really supportive. So that's the next element. The one after is rest and relaxation, and so that ties in. That ties in with physical activity, and that is, you know, something we all need every day. We all need to sleep and rest. But I think in our modern lifestyle, our modern 24/7 lifestyle, we have actually put rest and relaxation on the back burner a little bit. And I think that when we get a serious illness like cancer, we're forced very often to start to look at how much we're resting and sleeping, and I think that's absolutely essential, because when we're in deep sleep and rest, then that's when our body is most able to heal itself. So the next one, the fifth element on my seven elements of healing, is something called bioenergetic balance. Now, I am absolutely fascinated by energy medicine.
Just describe what you mean by energy medicine
first. Okay, so when you get right down to it, we are all composed of energy, and the new, relatively new science of quantum physics has shown us that. And unfortunately, this idea that we are energetic beings hasn't filtered into mainstream thinking yet, certainly not mainstream medical science, but I absolutely believe that will happen before too long. But having said that, there are energy therapies such as acupuncture that are becoming available on
that's
the NHS.
Mainstream, yes.
Yeah, so it's beginning to happen.
Yeah.
If you look to ancient Eastern medicines like Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese medicine, then they were very clear that the body is made up of energy, and their whole system of healing was about rebalancing the energies. And I think we've forgotten in the West a lot of that very important information, although it is coming back and becoming more popular. So because we're energetic beings, we need to be aware of how the things we do, our behaviours, affect our energy balance. And so this is what this element is concerned with, balancing our energies. And we can do that in many ways. So we get affected negatively by certain energies, such as electromagnetic radiation. There's quite a lot of research coming out, and I think you had one of your interviews talking about this subject. From mobile phones, laptops, and other electrical equipment that we're now exposed to so much more than we've ever been before, and this is inevitably having an effect on our energy balance. But we can counteract that, and we can rebalance our energies by many different things, but I think one of the ways we can do it most effectively is connecting with the earth. I don't know if you know much about earthing, or sometimes called grounding, but again, there's a bit of research coming out on this, and lots of anecdotal information, that when we actually connect with the earth, so barefoot on the earth, that actually the electron flow in the ground actually seeps into our body and helps to rebalance the energies in our body. But not necessarily walking around barefoot on the ground, just being in nature has a very rebalancing effect on our energy.
This is beginning to become a kind of prescribed treatment for some conditions.
It is. So ecotherapy, as it's sometimes called, has been looked at in research studies, and there have been some studies with people with cancer. At the moment, it's looking more at people's emotional, psychological well-being, being in nature, but I believe that it goes beyond that. I think that it's also to do with direct exposure and the energies that we get from nature that have a healing effect on the body. So yes, that's another fascinating area of research that's coming out. So that's the fifth element. The sixth is emotional well-being. And I feel that this is absolutely fundamental. And it's not about forcing ourselves to be happy all the time, which a lot of people sort of have in their mind that that's what you need to do. If you're going to get well, you have to feel happy all of the time. You can never feel sad. That is not true at all. Emotions, I believe, are here to guide us and bring us messages. And when we're healthy, we're listening to those messages and we're allowing them. So when sadness comes up, we allow it. We don't push it down, we don't avoid it, we don't run away from it. We go right into it, we let ourselves feel it completely. And this ties in slightly with Brandon Bay's technique, The Journey. I don't know if you know much about her work, but she had a tumour, and this is about 20 years ago. She was already a healer working in that field, and the way that she cured herself, as she looks at it, from this tumour, is to allow herself to sink into all the emotions that came up over a period of time. She took herself off for, I don't know, a few days or so, and sort of isolated herself and just allowed herself to go through the process of allowing all the emotions that needed to come and to just feeling them deeply and allowing them to process. And I think that we may not all do it in such a dramatic way as that, but I think if we can learn to feel the emotions that come up in our daily life rather than pushing them away, which I think we tend to do, especially in our culture, then I think we end up as being much healthier beings. And if we allow the sadness, the anger, the hurt, the pain that inevitably comes up around the time of a cancer diagnosis or anything else dramatic and painful in our life, if we allow those emotions to come up and be felt, then I think they've done their job, and then they will naturally dissipate after some time. And then what lies underneath, which I think is more, you know, of the what we would say positive emotions, can come to the fore. So, as I say, emotional well-being is not about feeling happy all the time, it's about allowing emotions to flow. Emotions are energy, and energy needs to move, it needs to flow. If we block it, then we cause problems on many levels, and eventually we can cause physical disturbance in our body because we're blocking that energy from flowing.
It's one form of disconnection, really, isn't it?
It is.
Actually cutting yourself from your own emotions, which are, after all, they're you.
Absolutely.
Being disconnected, basically.
And talking of connection, the last element on my Seven Elements of Healing is called Deep Connection, which needs a bit of explanation because not everyone would, you know, grasp what I'm talking about there. So I see deep connection as having three components to it, and this is just what came to me when I was developing these ideas. And as I have told you, and as you said at the beginning, my feeling is that with serious illness, but particularly cancer, very often people have lost connection. And so this element is really focusing on how we can bring that back. We never completely lose our connection, but we temporarily do. So it's about reconnecting. So the three areas that I feel we've often lost our connection, we need to rebuild that, is first of all, connection to ourselves. And it might be that we're not allowing ourselves to feel our emotions, we're not listening to the deeper messages of our body. And I think in our culture, we're not encouraged to listen to our body and to listen to our intuition. If you look at other cultures, they are more encouraged to do that. But in the West, we're not so much. But our body is always speaking to us all of the time through physical symptoms and also through intuition and gut feelings. And we can all learn to tune into that. We can all learn to notice what's going on in our body. And this is really mindfulness. The whole idea of mindfulness has become very popular and is also infiltrating the NHS a little bit. So mindfulness is just about being present and being aware and listening. And as I say, it can be about listening to our physical symptoms. So if we eat a certain food and then we get a bit of a tummy ache, we might think, oh, perhaps food didn't suit me at this time. So it can be as simple as that, but also it can be about listening to our intuition. And as I say, you don't have to be some psychic person to be able to listen to your intuition. We all have it. And all it is about regularly getting quiet, taking time to get quiet and just breathe deeply and just see what comes up. And I encourage all my clients to build a practice into their daily life style to actually take 10-15 minutes, maybe a bit longer, to have some quiet time, and maybe to use a journal to write down thoughts that come up, or just to sit and see what comes up. So that's the first component of this deep connection. It's about rebuilding connection to ourselves and listening to ourselves. And what I say to a lot of people is, you can go to as many experts around the world about your diagnosis and what treatment's right. You can go to the best doctors, the best scientists, the best nutritional therapists, and they can all give you really informed information based on the latest science. But at the end of the day, they don't know you like you know you.
You've still got to make up your mind at the end of the day what to do and how do you do that.
Well, I think connecting and listening to your body is an absolutely crucial part of making those decisions. So the next component is about connection with others. And Kelly talks about this in her book.
Yes.
And there's some really good research that shows that when we are connecting with others, when we've got a good support network with friends, with family, or maybe support groups, then that actually has been shown to improve outcome with cancer. On the other hand, if people are feeling isolated, socially isolated and lonely, that has a really negative impact and has a direct negative impact on our immune function. So that is another very, very important area. And for people who don't have a lot of friends and family around them, it's obviously more difficult. But there are groups out there are organisations, you know, like Yes to Life that can support people. There's always ways of making those connections. And then the final component of deep connection is probably the most difficult to describe, but this is about connection to something greater than ourselves. And you could call that many different things. If you're a religious person, you might use the word God. You might use universal mind. You might use all that is. Whatever it is, it's this idea that there is something greater than ourselves. And if we connect to that and even have some sense of that, that can nourish and support us. And I believe out of anything, that's probably the most important thing. And there's many ways we connect to that. It's not about necessarily having a religious faith, or it might be, but it's also we can connect to that more spiritual aspect through nature, through being with animals, through music, through art. There's many, many mm-hmm. different ways, and it's different for every person.
Yeah.
And it's really about finding yourself, what it is that connects you to that feeling of something greater.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think you can see even a way into that these days through science.
Yes.
Because science is increasingly pointing to things that would normally be seen as kind of spiritual views. You know, one of the most commonly reported aspects of a spiritual experience will be that a person realizes they're absolutely indivisible from everything around them. They're completely connected to everything. Mm-hmm. And the idea that they were separate was just that. It was mm-hmm. only an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about this in terms of the inner and the outer environment actually mm-hmm. being the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't mm-hmm. live in a toxic world and be clean and healthy inside.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all different ways of describing the same thing, and they in fact they actually go beyond being connected. They actually go as far as being the same as, you know,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
separate from
yes.
everything else.
Yes, and that again is something that that fascinates me, is this connection that we have with everything else in our universe. You know, we are connected to all other complex beings in the universe, to the animals, to the plants, to the rocks, to the rivers. And this isn't just, you know, crazy esoteric thinking.
No.
This is being proved by science. And in the last few decades, we've taken big jumps forward in that. And as I mentioned earlier, I think before we used to rely on traditional ancient cultures that talked about this life force. You know, the Chinese talking about qi,
yeah.
prana, Native Americans, the Great Spirit. You know, every ancient culture has a term for this, which is really interesting. But in Western thinking, it was not really considered. But scientists are discovering that we are connected to other, you know, complex beings in our universe. And the HeartMath Institute, I'll just mention them because I can't remember their website, but I'm sure we can
put
it on your page.
Yeah.
They have such an amazing amount of research, and they're doing such great work on what they call coherence, which I'll explain. And they're a non-profit organisation, and they're looking at the energies in our environment and our body, particularly around the heart. They're called the HeartMath Institute. So there's a massive amount of really good information on that website. So some of the things I'm talking about, if people want to find out more, they are a great resource. So they are talking about coherence, and this is coherent energy in the physics terms is when the waves of energy are in sync. So the amplitude is the same, the space between the waves are the same. That's what coherence means. And coherent energy can transmit information, whereas incoherent energy can't. And what scientists are finding is that we have the energies within our body, when they're coherent, that's when our body is healthy. But also there is coherence in the energies outside of our body, and that there is a relationship between our energies and energies outside of the body. So geomagnetic and solar energies in our universe affects the energies within our body. There is this relationship. So like you were saying, the energies within our body, they extend outwards infinitely. It doesn't just stop with our body, and we are connected to the energies of everything else in our universe. And this research is just going to change, as I said before, change medicine in years to come beyond belief. I think the other thing that's scientists are discovering, which is fascinating, is how energy travels through our body. And what's been found is that in our what we call cellular microenvironment, so this is the space between our cells, we have structures, we have microtubules, we have cytoskeleton, so sort of connective tissues, and these form a crystalline structure with the water molecules in our body, and this crystalline structure is what transmits the energy through our body, and it can transmit the energy in an instant. And this is fascinating because before, scientists thought that the way our molecules communicated was actually just by physically meeting with each other and connecting and bonding. But there was a lot of puzzlement over this because it was known that the amount of reactions that are occurring, the speed
too
at
slow.
Which it's just too slow.
Yeah.
So this now is explaining that, because as I said, with this crystalline structure that carries through our whole body, energy can transmit information in an instant throughout our whole body. Just going back to the Heart Math Institute, their work is around, as I say, very much around the heart. And what has been discovered is that the heart, much more than just a physical pump, is actually almost like a second brain, and it communicates very much with our neural brain, sending messages, and the heart also produces hormones. But what's really important about the heart is it regulates the energies within the body and creates coherence. So when we're looking after our heart, and looking after our heart, we need to look after our emotions, then we are creating this coherent energy within the body, which allows information to spread. And I don't know if you've heard of the work of Professor Popp. Do you know
No.
his work? So he discovered that our cells produce light through the DNA, biophotons,
yeah.
And that a lot of the communication, our energy communication, is through light. And he looked at people with cancer and discovered that people with cancer, they're not producing the same light energy as a normal healthy person, and that the energy that's being produced is not coherent, it's scrambled, it's chaotic, which means that the information flow through the body is not as it should be. So just bringing it back to cancer for a minute, and just how the coherent energy can be out of balance in someone with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I'm bringing in a lot of things.
You are,
I know.
You are. So look, you just brought it back to cancer, which is good.
Mm.
This is a program about cancer, but
yes.
You can easily spread out all over the place. Very interesting.
Mm.
Maybe we can talk about the whole genetic thing for a minute.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Genetics,
mm-hmm.
epigenetics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those chicken and egg kind of situations.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've got a lot to say about this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that genetics is involved in cancer, let me just say that. But I think that linear thinking has dominated medical science for a long, long time. And the idea that one thing leads to, you know, one element leads to disease has been sort of way that we've looked at disease. And that works well when you've got an infection caused by a particular bacteria, but our modern diseases tend to be a lot more complex than that,
right.
Such as cancer, and we do need to look at a more whole systems approach rather than just this one element leads to that. But that linear thinking has been applied with cancer, and there's something called the somatic mutation theory, which just means that you have a genetic mutation which leads to an advantage in that cell, which then divides and you get a clone of those cells, and then you get another mutation which again gives it another advantage, and then that divides, and then this process goes on and on, gathering mutations until you get to a point where you've got a group of cells that are now have a real survival advantage and can survive in hostile environments and go off and divide and eventually spread. This somatic mutation theory is being increasingly challenged, and a bit like I said earlier, where the maths don't quite add up when it comes to molecules binding just by coming together physically. The same thing applies with the somatic mutation theory. You need so many genetic mutations to occur to end up with a cancer cell that's able to outwit our very powerful immune system and survive in very hostile environments, that the time scales just didn't really quite add up with this theory. So that is causing scientists to come up with alternative views. I think another thing that has sort of undermined this theory is the fact that scientists have been looking for these genes that explain cancers.
Yeah.
And there was something called the Cancer Genome Atlas Project, which has sought to identify what are the key genes that are present in different cancers. And this has been going on for a while now, and findings have been coming in. And it's sort of shocked a lot of scientists, because what they've found is that it's a lot more random than they were expecting.
This is the important thing, the random nature. They're expecting some nice answers to come out
they
the other
were.
End. And it's completely random. And so
it is. And even people with the same type of cancer have got different mutations. So that has shocked a lot of people. And there is an alternative theory which has been developed by sort of different groups of scientists, but it's sort of all coming together now. There's two scientists called Anna Sotto and Carlos Sonnenschein, who developed something called the tissue organization field theory. And this is gaining ground. And really what this shows is that cancer arises from dysregulation in the environment. So it's the environment interacting with the DNA that's the problem. And the genetic mutations certainly occur in cancer, but it might be that they're a result of problems within the environment.
Well, the chaotic nature of them speaks much more of it being a symptom, because of course if you apply the same problem to a million different people who've got completely different backgrounds, different environments, different histories, then the likelihood of you getting a million different answers is quite high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, after the discovery of DNA, we've thought that DNA is the key to life.
Yes.
But actually, newer thinking is DNA is a translator. It's the interface between the environment and what manifests in our body. And but it's not the root. It's not where it comes from. So it's really all about what's going on in our environment and how the DNA responds to that. And the new field of epigenetics is really showing us that the DNA and genetic mutations and genetic manifestations depend on what's going on in the environment. And one of the most renowned scientists, I think, working in this field currently is Mina Bissell. She has found that not only are cancer cells unable to thrive unless the conditions are right, so even when you've got a fully developed clone of cancer cells, if you put them in a healthy environment, what she's found is they will actually revert back to normal. So a quote from her is that context overrides. In different contexts, cells do different things. So even when you've got cancer cells, if you put them in the right environment, they will change.
That's an extremely empowering message to people with
it
cancer,
is.
Isn't it? Because it just
Absolutely.
Says, if you can make your body as healthy as
yes.
possible,
yes.
you're giving any cancer cells no real
yes.
run for their money.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we're thinking about our environment, we need to look broadly. We need to look at the environment outside of our body and inside. And as you said earlier, the two are one and the same. what we are exposed to outside our body becomes what's inside our body. And so, yes, this really feeds into the idea that if we breathe clean air, we eat clean food, and we drink pure water, that that will in turn become a healthy microenvironment. And then our cells will be receiving healthy messages, and then the DNA won't need to respond with genetic mutations. So this is a very new way of looking at cancer, but it's really gaining ground. This is not just the thinkings of a few radical scientists completely on the fringes. It really isn't. It's becoming, you know, quite rapidly becoming much more mainstream. There's a lot of research being done. People like Mina Bissell, you know, she's really got a bit of a name for herself. She did a TED talk, and that sort of really took off, and she's got a team of people working with her, and there's other scientists as well doing this work. So I think it's going to change the way that medical science views cancer, and it really will bring to the fore the importance of how we live, the environment we live in, and the environment within our bodies. Also, you know, I talked about clean water, clean air, and good food, but also our emotional well-being. That also affects our microenvironment at the cellular level. So the way that we're processing our emotions, as I spoke to earlier, will also have an impact, and science again has shown this, on the health of our milieu, if you like, of the microenvironment.
Okay, well look, what I'd like to do to finish off is just to look at the kind of advice that you've already talked obviously about a lot of the things you would try and change in order to create this healthy environment, but maybe you could just give some a typical range of advice of the different areas you would attend to when somebody comes to you with an early diagnosis and you're trying to help them.
Yes. Well, when I first speak to people, and I usually do a little mini consultation on the phone before I first meet people, I do explain that the way I work is quite broad. And that has really come from the fact that, you know, as I said, having worked in this field for quite a few years, I've seen that when you put these elements together, they're synergistic and they have a much more powerful effect than just looking at nutrition. So nutrition is pretty much always where we start. That's usually why people are coming to me. They want to change their diets. They know that what they eat is important. So that's where we start. And you know, we look at the diet, we look at supplements, and I always tailor a program very much to the individual's needs. But then once we've got that area covered and we sort of know what we're doing, obviously it changes over time, but once we sort of, people are confident with that side, then I bring people to start to look at the other areas. And every kind of person is different, and where we focus next just really depends on the individual. Some people aren't quite ready to talk about emotional well-being. They're not quite ready to look a bit deeper within themselves and start to think about the more spiritual aspects of life. And you can't force people to do that. They have to be ready for that. Some people are never ready for that, and that's okay. But what I've found is that nutrition is a really good inroad, because it makes sense practically. It's very science-based. And I think it starts to connect people to the environment in a and nature in a bigger way, because obviously with food we're talking about where food comes from, its origins, and that starts to make people think about, okay, what is it that, you know, in my lifestyle that's maybe got a bit out of balance and got a bit disconnected. So it does naturally bring people to think about the wider areas. So nutrition is a great place to start. As I say, we then move on to the other areas, and sometimes we keep it very practical. So the exercise, the exposure to daylight and sunshine, that's part of the bioenergetic balance. But eventually, I like to bring it round to helping people to look deeper within. As I say, not everyone's up for that, and that's okay. But a lot of my clients, we get to that point. Now, I'm not trained in psychotherapy or psychology, so if people really do need quite in-depth emotional support, then I would refer them for that type of care. But I do see my role as helping to guide people to the resources and the right people for the emotional support, and also I do talk a lot with the people who want to about finding the things in their life that can connect them more on a spiritual level. And it is my experience that people who are willing to look broadly and to embrace all the those elements I've said, and to look within themselves, because once they start to look within themselves, then they start to get the cues that their body's trying to give them about how they, as individuals, can rebalance themselves and their life. You know, a lot of people make big changes. They might ditch their job. They may decide to move because the house they're in has just never felt nurturing. You know, sometimes people make big decisions, not always, but once people start to look within, then they can really find their truth as to what it is they need to rebalance their life. And as I said, the people that are willing to do that, I find, do seem to do better. Mm. That's been my experience, and which is why I continue to work in this way.
Mm. Very interesting. Okay, I'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much. I really enjoyed today's talk. It's much the sort of thing I think about in relation to life as a whole, but particularly in relation to illness and cancer.
Yes.
So it's been fascinating to talk with you today.
Thank you for coming back and doing a second interview. You know that I wanted to talk about this. We've covered lots of things, and perhaps we'll put a few resources for people
Definitely.
Who want to read more.
I do hope you all found that as interesting as I did. Liz and I think along some very similar lines, so it was great to have her share her insights from such intensive work with cancer for so many years. All the resources mentioned in the show are on the Yes to Life website, yestolife.org.uk. Click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar and then choose UK Health Radio. If you're into social media, then do take a look at my Facebook page or follow me on Twitter at rmk_daily. You might also want to check out our new book, The Cancer Revolution, on Facebook and at Cancer Rev on Twitter. It also has its own website, thecancerrevolution.co.uk. And of course, Yes to Life has its own Facebook and Twitter followings. In next week's show, I shall be talking to Britt Cordy about wheatgrass, a long-used staple of dietary approaches to cancer. I hope you'll be able to join me again. Goodbye.